Oh, seriously, I'm just as anxious to hear our speaker today as you are, our speakers. Of course, I have the honor of introducing our Al-Anon speaker today. And I have had the privilege of knowing her and visiting in her home. I know that she's a very fine person and a very, very fine cook. Even my wife will bear me out on that. And I'm sure that all of you are going to enjoy knowing her as I have. So at this time, I'll call on Edith.
I'm indeed glad that he said I'm a good cook and not a good speaker. First of all, I would like to thank you, the committee, and everyone that took part in inviting us to come here to take part at this great convention. Up to this point, it has indeed been a great convention. I love conventions, but I must say I like them better when I can sit back there and listen. So I don't have to walk around during the whole convention with butterflies in my stomach. And believe you me, I have them in there. First I thought this may scare me to death, but now it's sort of a camouflage, so maybe I'll hold on to one of these things and make it after all. I feel extremely honored to be here today to witness for Alcoholics Anonymous what it has done for us in our lives. My name is Edith Thompson. I am an enthusiastic member of Al-Anon, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous as well. I guess I did not consume enough alcohol to be a full-fledged member, but nevertheless, I consider myself also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My husband, Tommy, became powerless over alcohol some years ago. That was the time when I became totally powerless over an alcoholic. I love AA. Why do I love AA? Because Tommy is sober today. Never mind tomorrow. He is sober today, and my thinking is sober today, and I am happy today. I think it was a hard fight, but it was well worth it that I stuck it out to be here today to witness and to show you that miracles can happen. I do not have any children of my own, but I do have a stepson who to me is possibly as much as any own child could be. He chose the ministry for his profession. He lived with us all of our married life till he went on to college, and he's now at seminary. I cannot tell you in words how proud I am of this boy. Possibly it took an alcoholic father to make this boy decide to choose the ministry and the work of the Lord. If it took that, the price was high, but well, well worth it. I have only one story to tell, and many of my good friends are here today who have heard me over and over. But it is only one story, and I hope it always will only be one story. Only the marvelous part of the story becomes longer and longer and longer. I am also privileged today to have my two sisters here, one of my and their husbands and my little nephew. We three sisters, I'm originally from Germany. I imagine you know this by now. We three sisters have not been together for 12 years. So you know, over this fact, I'm very enthused also. Now, they only know the nice Tommy Thompson. So when I get through with him, they may not let him in the house anymore. But this chance I will have to take, because I must tell this story, this one and only story, and this true story. I never knew much about alcohol. It was never a problem in my family. I have never seen anyone in my family intoxicated or drunk. In my estimation, anyone who stumbled around under the influence of alcohol was just a drunken bum. That is all I knew. Thank God for AA. Today I know better, and I am able to inform the other people that there is not such a thing. When I met my husband, I will have to skip various periods in my life, so I go on now from the time when I met Tommy in 1949 in Wiesbaden, Germany, where he was stationed. The war was over, but I was soon to enter into another war, the war with the bottle. I think if you ask me today, what's worse, World War II or the war with alcohol, I would say, I take World War II any day. I think that's a big statement to make, but you Al-Anons and many of you alcoholics may possibly agree with me. When I met Tommy, I thought he was the most handsome and fascinating man that ever was sent to Germany. I think he was very truthful to me about everything but alcohol. But I didn't ask any question because I didn't know what to ask. He took me to wonderful places. The American officers were privileged to visit very fine places in Germany, and I enjoyed that to an extent. But one day he popped the question to me and said, "Do you care to drink?" I found it a rather funny question, but I said, "Well, I guess I can take it or leave it. How about you?" He said, "Same for me." So, we had no problem. It never entered into my mind that we were to have one. Occasionally, when we went to the places, I wondered, because he seemed so extremely considerate when he would order a drink for himself and a drink for me, and he would never let my drink stand there 2-3 minutes, and he'd say, "Honey, your drink is getting stale. I'll get you a new one. Let me have yours, too." Well, I thought that was quite considerate, but by that fact, he consumed a good bit at times. At the same time, I really don't know if he ever introduced me to any American overseas at that time that didn't drink, so I thought, well, after all, you folks won the war, why shouldn't you celebrate? So this part never entered into my mind that we were heading for a problem. Of course, at the same time, I didn't plan to marry the fellow anyway, so we had a good time together. But as time went on, I guess we grew quite fond of each other. But the time came when Tommy had to return to the States. And then he proposed. He claims I did, but I think he did. Well, anyway, we started, I don't know if any of you are familiar with this, but it involved an enormous amount of red tape. I tell you, I couldn't tell you in words how long it took and how much paper was required for our marriage to come through. In fact, it can take the most strenuous teetotaler to become an alcoholic just trying to fight this red tape that we had to fight. But I was stubborn enough and see it through. So one day he called me from the States. In fact, he called me twice that night. In fact, he told me the wrong information twice that night, and he was telling me he was coming over. He later wrote that he noticed on his phone bill that he called me. I think he was celebrating that night very heavily. But nevertheless, the time finally approached in 1952 when he came to Germany and we got married. Well, he came with his son, and his son stayed with me a while. He returned to England. Since he was married to a German at the time, he could not live in Germany, which makes a lot of sense, so we had to move to England. Anyway, I stayed in Germany 4 more weeks to get the remainder of my papers necessary, and I arrived in England. Well, everything was wonderful. We had housing. This all to me was marvelous. When you haven't had hot water and a piece of soap and toothpaste in so many years, you appreciate everything. And I did indeed. We had a wonderful time till one sunny day he told me that all the Americans are receiving rations for 12 40-ounce bottles of liquor. And I said, well, that's nice, but we don't have to get it. And he says, well, honey, you wouldn't let rations go to waste, would you? And I said, no, ordinarily I wouldn't, but I sure would let this kind of stuff go to waste because we don't need it, do we? And he says, well, I think I better get it. Well, and indeed he did. And I tell you, our problem started right in England. And I all of a sudden stood right in the middle of it, and I could not understand, to save my life, why a person would drink who was married, had a son, had a job, had money coming in and a place to live and running hot and cold water. This to me seemed absurd, and I could not figure that out to save my life. But you know, before I knew it, the partying increased. We found ourselves in the clubs every night. We had a lot of entertaining going on, and it was a vicious circle. So I thought, well, something has to happen. I have to change this. So I started to tell him, this is one thing that provoked me no end. When a civilized person took a bottle and drank out of it, I said, if at least be civilized about it and pour the stuff in a little glass and take a drink, but I'm not going to stay married to a guy who drinks straight out of a bottle. This seemed to humiliate me. Well, then I soon found out this didn't work. I told him how to drink. I told him how not to drink. I told him where to drink, and I told him where not to drink. I think many of you understand. We just tried everything under the sun, trying to figure out, why does that man have to drink where he has everything? This didn't seem to get into my head. But there was no way for the better. Things became worse and worse. I went to my neighbors at last and confided in them. I was dead set not to let my folks at home know how things were there. Because I made my bed, and the Germans are bullheaded. They're going to stick it to the end regardless what happens. And I was determined to do just that. So I went to my neighbors. I confided in them when it got right rough in our house. So they said, well, there are two ways. You either leave the fellow. He drank like that all of his life, evidently. He drank before you came like that. So leave the guy or stick it out. Those were the two answers. Those are the two answers I would never tell anyone today, because believe you me, I have learned over the years, as long as there is life, there is hope for the worst of the alcoholics. But this didn't seem to do any good. I threatened to go back home. This didn't work. I finally was told if I went to the chaplain and he would have a talk with Tommy, that may help. Well, we liked the chaplain very much. And I must say, every Sunday, we went to the church, and on the way back, we always had to stop at the club, and no telling when we got home. Maybe that's the reason we went to church, but nevertheless, I never questioned that. We did go to church and knew the chaplain quite well. One day, the chaplain said to me, he will talk to Tommy. In the meantime, Tommy had lost some rank because of alcohol. And when I told Tommy that the chaplain wanted to see him, he was quite thrilled. He thought he would get all his rank back. Well, he went to see him too. The chaplain talked to him, but it didn't help at all. In fact, it made matters worse. I went to the CO. Well, evidently at the time he did his job all right, and it took more than just my going there and complaining to convince them that we had a severe problem with alcohol in our house. Then I went to the legal officer, and when I told him all our troubles, he got quite amused and started laughing at the end of my sad story and said, first of all, I just get so tickled the way you talk. And I said, well, I didn't come here to amuse you. I'm coming here to find a solution to our problem. I did not find a solution, neither did I find an answer. But I do not condemn these people for it, because they didn't know any more at the time about alcoholism than I did at that time. But things didn't get any better. But the only thing I thought was, well, when he was in Germany, he was dying to get back to the States. When he was in England, I felt if he's once back home, then there is absolutely no excuse left, and he must stop. So I thought if I can hang on for the remainder of the time we had to stay in England, then maybe in the States everything would be fine. So I tried my very best, and I asked him, and I said, when we knew when we would have to go to America, I had never been in this country then, I said, now you have to prove to me that you can stay sober, because otherwise I go back home. You know, that's a marvelous solution for an alcoholic. But indeed he showed me that he could stay sober, and he didn't drink for several weeks. I wouldn't call it that we had the most congenial and cozy and happy family life, but at that time I didn't care how mean and how ornery he was, as long as I didn't smell any liquor. That suited me. Just be sober. I don't care how mean you are. And that's about the situation that it was. Anyway, we got to the States, and in the States, my troubles were over. Of course, why shouldn't they? If we are in the States now, the fellow was getting out of the army that he was thoroughly fed up with at the time. He was getting back to the United States, and we were going to settle for the rest of our lives. There was no excuse left, was there? And this is what I thought. And on top of that, we went back to him, his home state. After all, the poor fellow hasn't had any hot biscuits and cornbread and black-eyed peas for so long. He was home, and I mean, there was nothing left for him to blame it on that he had to get drunk, because he had it all, including the beautiful South Carolina sunshine. And another thing that happened that suited me very well, and you may understand this, we were broke, too, and had no money. This I liked, because money we didn't need at all, because the more money we had, the more went for liquor. I must say, though, that I was always being fed, so was little Tommy. But at the same time, I stayed so keyed up and so sick all the time that it really didn't take many groceries to keep me alive. But he did provide for us, I must say. When we came to South Carolina, I tell you, for the first time in my life, I saw pint bottles and half pint bottles. I never knew you had that size. But what comes out of those bottles seems to have the same effect as the 40-ounce bottles and the quarts and the fifths. I'm very well up to date on those bottle sizes, I tell you. I've seen them all. So things didn't improve at all. In fact, it started again. And I said, well, don't you love me? You have no other reason to drink. It must be because you don't love me. You love that bottle better. Why did you bring me to the States? Don't you Al-Anons know that we have said so many times, if you loved me, you wouldn't drink? Well, we felt that way about it, indeed. But things didn't get any better. In fact, they got worse. Then he had a bright idea and said, I think we both ought to enroll in business college. Now, I wondered what he thought, but today I have a good idea. He thought I would support him the rest of my life. This I wasn't about to do, because I happen to like to stay home and keep house. But somehow or another, I think it was good for me, and it was a diversion, so we both enrolled and both took a course. How we made it, I don't know till this day, but we did. Anyway, one day, he was quite intoxicated. We had quite a battle at home again, as usual, and he disappeared. And I didn't know where he was. Till that night, the phone rang, and somebody, and I said, this is so-and-so, and it said, this is the jail. And I thought, God, they must have the wrong number, surely. But no, it said, my husband was in jail. This, to me, was the bottom. I thought there could be nothing more degrading than for a human being to end up in jail. God, have I learned a lot, because today I recommend jail. In fact, every time I drive by, we ride by that jail, or I drive by, I take off my hat if I have one on and say, God, thank God for this jail. Although, believe you me, at the time, I didn't feel like that. I was totally ashamed. I never wrote this home. I know if my sisters are still alive in this audience, I'm surprised. They don't know that. I was so totally ashamed, I didn't know what to do. The only good thing I got out of it, I got a night's sleep. The next morning, I said to little Tommy, what's going to happen? Your daddy is in jail. I guess I better call up there and see when they let him out. So I did. I was quite formal. I said, I'm Mrs. Thompson, and I understand my husband is there. When can he come home? So I was informed, lady, if you want him out, get over here with $100, then you can get him out. Well, who had $100 but poor little Tommy? He had been working over the years, and he had $100. So I said, Tommy, you have to get your daddy out of jail because you will not catch me dead walking to that jail. Tommy says, well, I see your point, but you are his wife and I am his son and I'm not about to go. If we go, we go together. I said, Tommy, dress in your very best. And our very best looked bad at the time because at least I'm going to show those guys that he comes from a decent family. So little Tommy put on his Sunday suit and I put on what you call my very best. We got to the bank at 9 o'clock. Little Tommy, bless his heart, got out his $100 and we went to the jail. Ooh, I never forget that day. I still see the bars and the guys and the atmosphere and the smell. I just never forget it. So I went in there and I said, well, I am Mrs. Thompson and I would like to get my husband out. And there comes the guy, and this just provoked me no end. There comes the guy and said something about, you know, my frame of mind at the time. So he says, lady, how about a bond? And I said, my heavens, I know they sell everything in this country, but if that guy is going to sell me United States savings bonds at this time... I thought that beats it all, to take advantage of a poor, down-and-out woman and to try to sell her some when I'm poverty-stricken as it is. And I said, never mind, I'm not buying a thing today. And I know he thought till this day that I should be in Columbia in the hospital, in the mental institution. But I later on didn't know this for a long time what this meant, but I know everything now about jail. Just ask me, I tell you. So then I thought at least they would bring my husband to me. No, I had to walk up those iron steps, and here he was behind the bars with some lovely roommates. So I thought, well, here I have a chance to let him have it because he can't do a thing. But he wasn't about to let me have it. The first thing he said, honey, I gave the rest of the liquor to the cops. Did you hear me? I gave them the rest of my liquor. You know I'm through. Of course, I believe that. Because there couldn't be anything after being in jail. I mean, that's rock bottom, and he had hit it. So he kept telling me over and over that he gave the rest of the liquor to the cops and just to get him out. And I said, well, I'm not in such a big hurry. I got a few more things to tell you while you're behind these bars. And if you don't listen to me, I can just turn around because you can't get out, can you? Says, no, honey, I can, but let me out fast because I'm going to be good from now on. Well, I believed it. We paid the $100 and we marched home. Well, do you think that was the turning point? No, it wasn't. It wasn't very long after that when he told me one day that wine was no alcohol. Well, I have heard that many other times, too. But I said, well, in my book, it is alcohol. He says, no, I've just got to get a pint of wine. This really disillusioned me. I thought, now we have hit rock bottom. Because if that guy drinks again after he's been in that rotten jail, there is no hope for us. So things again turned bad. I said nothing. He got his pint of wine, and there we went again. It was very, very short after that we had what you call a marvelous evening at home. Little Tommy just could get through the window fast enough to get out, and I grabbed the door. We had this times like that. I said to little Tommy always, when it gets rough at home, you take the window and I take the door, because we didn't want a traffic jam when we were running for our lives. This we did, and thank the good Lord, little Tommy was a good sport right along. So he got out through his window, off he took. I got out through my door, and off I took. I really at the moment didn't know where I should go. But there was one good cousin of Tommy's, and God bless her, she was one place I knew I could go to. She was the person where we had stayed a while when we first came to South Carolina, and she's to me like a second mother. She's very understanding. Well, I went to her and I poured out my heart. This is why I'm so very much for listening sometimes. Listening to someone in trouble is so extremely important. Because she listened to me that night when I needed someone to listen to. But I tell you, I said, I am through with this bum. And I named him every horrible name that I never learned in school, I guarantee you. But I learned them over the years in my house. And I could think of every one of them, too. And this is what I called him, and this is what I thought of him. I said, I am through. And I tell you, I told her, and she said nothing. This was possibly the most marvelous thing that she could do for me. Just say nothing. Anyway, when I got through and was just desperate is no word for it. Of course, all along, the self-pity that had developed within me was without description. I had felt so sorry for myself, I think everything circled around myself. Of course, in a way, I understand it. We felt desperate. We didn't know what to do. So she said to me after I got through, we are having a church service tonight. Why don't you come along? Well, I had no other place to go. I always liked my church, and I always felt like I was a fairly religious person. But I said, okay, I guess I go along. Why shouldn't I? Now, this is something I tell you, people. This is something that no human being could have possibly created. When you talk about or hear about or read about a spiritual awakening, there was one in our life. I would not tell you this had it not happened so strangely and so marvelously, and no human being could have created it, but God alone did, and I will believe this till I die. This minister preached that night. The church was as full as this room is here today. Then it was even not my denomination. It was an altogether different type of service. But they had a pause and said, now we want to pray for the people in trouble and for the people who we know are in trouble. And believe me, for the first time I believe, I didn't say, God, why do I have to live with an alcoholic man, with a drunken bum? Help me. But I said, God, help this poor man. He needs you now more than ever. I cannot tell you ever in words what really took place within me. But that there is a power of God, I must admit, I must tell you, because it happened to us. I went home that night. How I felt, I couldn't tell you in words, but something had taken place. This wasn't the end of it, no. The next morning I went back into town. It wasn't the biggest town on earth. I didn't know where my Tommy was at that time. He was back in jail that night, yes. Ordinarily, I'm sure he would have said, I guess you put me in there. I met him. Why did I meet him? I will not know till this day, because it was meant that way. I met him in the middle of the street and he says, let's go home. Last night, I made up my mind. Something happened within me, in jail at that. Let's try it again. I had heard this let's try it again more than 100 times. But I believed it, and I was glad, and I believed it. We went home, and it didn't end there. We sat back, you know, the setting in a house after a horrible evening, ashtrays, empty bottles, the curtains drawn, filthy dishes, dirty laundry. Well, it was still good to be home. We sat down at the kitchen table, and we just sat till the phone rang. This to me is unbelievable, but it too happened. And I heard Tommy say, "Yes, Fred, AA, what's that? What do you mean? How do you know I have an alcoholic problem?" To me, I was speechless. When he hung the receiver down, he said, "Fred asked me to come to AA. He asked us both." I said, "Well, what a Fred, how did Fred know?" He said, "I don't know. Fred belonged to AA. We didn't know. We knew Fred all along. But Fred knew that we were ready for help, I believe." This you cannot tell me that anyone but God can do. I was ready. I didn't ask any questions. I had never in my life heard of AA. This to me was sufficient. This was a place for alcoholics. I visualized it as a little bit worse than jail, because I thought, well, if just drunk people go there, or people who just have been drunk, it must be worse than jail. I mean, I couldn't visualize it in any much civilized setting, but that didn't matter. He said, "We will have an area meeting." And I didn't say, "Can I go?" This was for me. This was something that was to help us. This Sunday, we got ready and went to our first meeting. It happened to be an area meeting. First of all, Tommy met many of the people he knew. It was a marvelous audience, just like you are here today. I saw the signs, "But for the grace of God." I knew the Spirit was in here. I was spellbound. I was fascinated. I am not really a fanatic person about something, but I am now about AA in my religion, I tell you. This was too great to not become that way. But then, this is what I will never forget, and this is what I must tell. And then, I wish this man was here today. He usually is at all the conventions. And this man gets up here and says, "My name is Viv E. I am an alcoholic." I will never forget that sentence. I thought, if any man or woman has the nerve to get up there and say that, I take my hat off to them. I felt that little that afternoon. I felt like, what a selfish individual have I been all these years. This man told his story. Yes, we say many times, "Well, I don't care for these hard stories, blow by blow." Maybe we don't, but don't forget the first man when he has been down and out and in skid row, and another nice, respectable man or woman get up there and say, "My name is so-and-so, I am an alcoholic, and I have been down your road." That is what gave us hope. Not the signs and not the hall and not the clothes, but the story the man told that night. From then on, AA was for me. Why is AA for me? In AA, I found the real God as I understand him, as I can communicate with him. I am forever thankful for God to lead us into Alcoholics Anonymous. I find this fellowship in AA priceless, not only in Atlanta, not only in Anderson, but in the whole United States and in the whole world. I tell you, we can never thank our founders enough for what they have done for mankind. This is a way to live for everyone. Let's leave the word alcohol out. It's good for us, I tell you. How many of us get up there and say, my name is Edith Thompson, and I am the most self-righteous person there is? We don't have the nerve to do it. The Serenity Prayer is my prayer. It helps me through everything. It helps me through sadness and anything that happens in my life. Our life is not a bed of roses, no. But I know and have learned how to tackle with it, one day at a time. This is the only way I live. It's one day at a time. Never mind yesterday, and tomorrow isn't here yet. I have also learned to put the right, or am trying to learn, to put the right value on life. Material things are nice, but we can't take them with us. But when a fellow pats you on your back in some years from now and says, girl or man, you have said something tonight that kept me sober, got me in AA, and made me find God, that's worth more than 1,000 houses and 1,000 cars in my book. We have Al-Anon, of course. I could tell you about Al-Anon as much. But AA and Al-Anon go hand in hand with me. We like our association of Al-Anon for the simple reason, mostly we have so many girls or boys whose alcoholic husbands or wives have not come into AA yet. Maybe they find it through by coming into Al-Anon first. Al-Anon is a very important thing for me. We study there to try to understand the alcoholic. We will never completely understand you. We will never completely see eye to eye with you. But we try. Give us that credit. We do try. And least and not last, I feel this way about it. This is what happened to me. When you let go and let God, you cannot fail with the help of AA. Thank you.